Right. Well, last week we ended up with Samuel and the people demanding that he get them a king, and the things he tried to impress upon them about not having a king. But the story today, we're going to see where he appointed Saul as their leader. And Saul was a great, let's say, military leader, had good qualities that way. The people, the Amalekites that he's going to confront, he's, quote, been constantly in battle with them all along. So you could say that Saul had the qualities to be the good king. He was a strong man. He was headstrong. A little bit superstitious. But we'll see how all this plays out. And we talked last week about if you were going to appoint someone to be king, what qualities you would want them to have, what, you know, their preparedness. But if God is looking for someone to fulfill a role, let's say in the life of the church, or to do a task, what qualities does He look for in us?
Definitely we follow Him.
Mm-hmm.
And do what He wants us to do.
Kind of aim us in the path of your spiritual gifts.
Yeah, because each and everyone has a different spiritual gift, some more than others. But does the person who always accepts this responsibility always fulfill the task the way it's supposed to be done or should be done?
No, we've seen that.
We try to do it our way.
And some people, if you give them a little bit of power, they make it a big power.
Really?
Yes. You think?
Mm-hmm. But the lesson in today, it starts 1 Samuel chapter 15. We'll just look at some of these verses. We'll start in verse 7. But if we, I'll back up a little bit. Samuel tells Saul, I am the one the Lord sent to anoint you king over his people. So now listen to the message from the Lord. He wants to punish the Amalekites because of what they did to Israel. And I thought it was interesting, verse 3, Samuel tells Saul that you are to destroy everything that belongs to them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. Now, why would you want to just... Do you think God would be so angry at someone that he wants to get rid of everything? It does sound kind of harsh.
And then that happened
with Noah. Well, yeah. But he saved animals to prepare for later. So Saul tells Samuel all of this, and this is what he's supposed to do. And it says in verse 7 that Saul attacked the Amalekites all the way from Havilah to Shur to the east of Egypt. It says he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and all of the people he totally destroyed with the sword. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and cattle, the fat calves and lambs, everything that was good. It says, these they were unwilling to destroy completely, but everything was that was despised and weak, they totally destroyed. Well, he's already started off on the wrong foot. If you're given a directive, let's say you're at a place of business and your boss comes in and tells you there's a certain thing I want you to do, and you know that if I go and do this task, it's going to make half of the room mad. So you go about your business, but you don't really completely do the job. What position does that put you in with your leader? Should put you in a bad position. But looking back, and I'm not going to harp on this, but I take it that the Amalekites were just constantly or did bad things to the people of Israel. And that's why God was so angry and wanted to just rid of them completely to start over. But looking at Saul's position here, if you did what he did, let's say I already saved the leader, I can understand maybe not getting rid of him, but he was directed to. But does greed come in?
He kept the
best of the sheep and the cattle and the choice animals. Why does a person do that? Mm-hmm. Because I can take this back home with me, and I can take care of my folks, my family.
Well, we all, you know, more is better, so I already got a bunch of sheep, so I need a bunch more to make it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably thought God wouldn't mind, because that's the best, and I'm going to take it back for God's people and all that, you know. Probably tried to justify it.
I'm sure, yeah. We always tried to make sure.
Mm-hmm. But a scenario comes up. You do a good job at work, and you're rewarded with a nice little bonus, a gift from the employer. Do you take that and give your tenth to the church and move on? Do you take it and give a little bit to a charitable organization that you like, but not quite as much as you would have given to the church? Or do you just take it all and put it in the bank and not worry about anybody else?
Well, see, that's where you come, more is better. You just keep it for yourself. But we also know, though, as tithers, by giving, not, well, to the church, but by giving your tithe, you're blessed twofold. So what you get is going to come back to you if you give it in a right spirit. So You end up really with more is better, but it's more through a blessing than just because you stashed it.
So does the word greed come back again?
Well, yeah.
You know, I just, you know. Lord, I know what you want me to do, but I really need to prepare for something else. And how many times have we seen that you do that, and in some way, something happens, and that money is...
All those zeros that you had, they go down to a zero,
mm-hmm.
because you didn't pay attention.
Do you think that Saul possibly kept the king, King Agag, thinking that I can use him to gain a big reward? Somebody else might want him more than the Lord does, and they'll pay me money for him, and then they may get rid of him because they don't like him. A lot of things to think about. But we go on and see Samuel hears all this, and it says in verse 10 that the word of the Lord came to Samuel. And he tells him, he says, I'm grieved that I've made Saul king because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. And it says Samuel was troubled and he cried out to the Lord all that night. And we're going to see where Samuel goes to confront Saul. Now, how difficult is it for anyone, if you know of a good friend, a good coworker, family member that's doing wrong, how difficult is it to confront them and tell them, I need to talk to you? Your action. Is it easier not to do it? And what results come from that? But on the other hand, you do go and confront them and you talk to them about the situation and they just get totally angry with you and make you feel real small. Have you done right? In your mind, yes. But, you know, does it make you wish I'd never done that? So what's right and what's wrong? Where do we draw the line?
We know through the years we've all had to do that. I mean, different reasons, maybe not as dramatic, but just some small things. And sometimes time heals. You come back and, you know, I appreciate what you did when you did try to help me 10 years ago, or you were there for me. So, I mean, in some ways, but nobody likes controversy. We all know that.
No. I mean, you have to do things with your children sometimes that you don't want to do. Sometimes it's hard. The tough love part comes out, and you have to tell them some things, and, you know, they might get angry and leave you. Same thing with family members. But it says in verse 12, that early that morning, Samuel got up and he went to meet Saul. But he was told that Saul had left and gone to Carmel. And there he has set up a monument in his own honor. And so Samuel turned and went down the road to Gilgal. And when he reached him, Saul said, "The Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instructions. I've done my job. Look at me. You know, I am so proud." But Samuel in 14 says, "Well, what is this, the bleating of sheep in my ears? What is this lowing of cattle that I hear?" And Saul tells him, "Well, the soldiers brought them from the Amalekites." I didn't tell them to. They did it on their own. "They spared the best of the sheep and cattle to sacrifice to the Lord your God, but we totally destroyed the rest." Is the language before and after, can it be that it's a little condescending? Or sometimes you hear something and it's said one way, but then when it's spoken to another, it's different. Samuel heard what the Lord said. He gave specific instructions to Saul. But when he confronts him, the soldiers did this. You know, I didn't do this.
Blame the messenger.
Right, true. No,
yeah, it's like, don't kill the messenger, though.
But does God ever regret or change his mind about anything?
It's
going to be before. I mean, I guess what the writer's trying to point out, would we ever think that the Lord would give such specific instructions but then regret it? Do you think in his heart maybe he hurts because I had to do this, but it has to be done?
It's the problem with sin, because when you sin, we hurt, and so that's
it. Mm-hmm.
then if you like, you go back to Noah, the Bible specifically tells you how it was, the ark was supposed to be built. I mean, you know, the cubits and the everything. So he knew, he had a reason to tell them to how to do that, because he knew that they were going to be there for 40 days. And you didn't need to be on a raft made out of, you know, paper and string. He knew that they were going to have to survive. And so that's why he was so specific. Same thing with the tabernacle. You know, how to hang the drapes and what to put in there. He knew how it was going to be used and how the people were going to be blessed by being a part of it.
And the instructions, you know, he gave to Abraham, you know, go to the stuff that he honored him. He's going to do.
Yeah.
So that would have been a hard instruction.
Could some people say that God was pretending to have regrets about Saul so that Samuel would be real serious about ending Saul's dynasty?
But it's like
on a play of word. I know he already knows.
It's going to play out, so...
This writer kind of brings out, he just puts this in here for thought. It implies that God was deceiving Samuel, but Samuel has always followed God, so why would he want to deceive him?
The excuse, like I thought you said?
Well.
You know, he didn't, like you said, everybody hears something different. I thought you said that we could keep the fat sheep. But that's not what you said.
That's not what you said.
I heard, you know, the sheep, we destroy everything, but we'll keep all the stuff that will benefit us.
Mm-hmm.
But God said to begin with that they didn't need a king because he was the king.
He was the king.
Right. Therefore, he was proving to them that the king would not be loyal to God.
And that the people would not be led the way they should be led to. Do we know more about the mind of God than we really think we know about it?
I think we know more. I think he lets us into him by studying the scriptures. He opens himself up. When we study the scriptures, we see the love, the discipline, the disappointment by knowing what's in this book.
But certain things you won't just know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more you feel him in your life by studying this.
Is that where we get in trouble? When we think we know more than God knows?
Yeah.
And we're going to take it on ourselves. But it also tells us in here about Samuel that he was just totally distressed about the whole situation and crying out all night. I'm sure he prayed to God all night. You know, help me, Lord. What have I done wrong? Why, you know, have we ever been in that situation to where you felt so guilty? Maybe did Samuel feel guilty because he maybe felt in his own heart, I haven't done what the Lord told me to do, because, you know, there again it gets back to that point, I told Saul what to do, he disobeyed me, so does that bring a disobedience between Samuel and the Lord? I don't think Samuel should feel that way.
Don't you think Samuel was probably hurt?
Oh, I'm sure.
Disappointed.
I'm sure.
Maybe he thought he didn't make what the Lord meant.
The writer kind of brings out, do you think, was Samuel maybe asking the Lord to give Saul another chance? You know, do we do that with friends and family and co-workers?
Yeah, yeah.
You got me one time, but I'll let you do it again. But the decision we see didn't come from Samuel. It came from God. Because when Saul tells Samuel that I built this monument. Or he did, he built it for himself. And he asked him about the cattle. Then Saul knows I'm in trouble. He starts making excuses. So.
Yeah, I'm going to blame the little peons.
He would have been in trouble when he built. I mean, how many folks you know is going to build an altar to their self?
Well,
he did.
Look what I've done.
He went from bad to worse. I know. Disobeying,
and then he does that. He dug him a big hole.
Mm-hmm. But do you think Saul knew where the conversation was leading to? Or was he just so hard-headed that, you know, hey, you've come here, you can blame me for all you want to blame me. I've done the job, and I'm proud of myself. You know, leave me alone.
Don't you think, too, when we go to somebody with an issue, your body language, your mannerism, your speech, your voice, people know that you are not happy with them, and so here we go. So do you not think that he need, like you said?
I'm in trouble.
He was in trouble when probably Samuel opened his mouth. He probably thought, whoa, I've done it
to you. You think so?
Yes.
Because when Saul, you know, he answered that the soldiers brought them and they spared them. And then verse 16, Samuel tells Saul to stop. And he says, let me tell you what the Lord has said to me last night. And Saul, just like anybody, tell me. Tell me, big boy. And Samuel tells him, verse 17, he says, although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed you king over Israel. And he sent you on a mission. Go and completely destroy those wicked people. Make war on them and have them wiped out. Why did you not obey the Lord? Why did you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul asked him, well, did I obey the Lord? I went on the mission. I completely destroyed them. I brought back Agag, but the soldiers, there again, I didn't do the soldiers brought the cattle back. Then Saul, in the last few verses, 22 and 23, he tells him, does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the voice of the Lord? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance like the evil of idolatry. Because you have received the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. Does anybody, I've had to look this up myself, the word divination, the meaning, it's someone who thinks they have the ability to look out into the future and foresee things. Did Saul have some of these characteristics, possibly? Instead of doing the job I was told to do, I'm looking out. So I know if I bring these cattle back, we're going to have food to eat. We're going to be prosperous in the future. But he didn't do what the Lord told him to do.
You see, that kind of goes back to what you, about the blessings.
Mm-hmm.
If he had behaved and did what he was asked to do, he was going to be blessed regardless because he followed God's instructions. But by not following God's instruction and doing what is right,
he lost his kingship.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, he's lost everything. And now his blessings that he had
is gone.
And what would he would have had by following the Lord, like Joy said, they're gone now.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to last week's when we talked about people who take it upon themselves. Like we mentioned, you started a new business and you're prospering and you're gaining wealth, but you forget about the church, you forget about the Lord. Do we sometimes get the conception of, okay, Lord, I've been obedient to you all my life. I've done the things you wanted me to do. I've worshiped you. I've shared your message. But I feel like I'm down here on the totem pole. I'm not blessed like other people are blessed.
Well, the Lord knew what was going to happen. The day we came to the world, he knew what we was going to have and what we wasn't going to have.
Mm-hmm. But do we take that sometimes and we feel like, well, okay, I'm going to switch it. I'm going to become less obedient. And now I see my life changing a little bit. And I feel better about myself, but I've given up on the Word of God. I don't support him like I used to. I don't come to church and do the things that I should do because I'm too busy taking care of myself to gain the status that I want.
That's the case of the devil leading you on, right, and making you turn your back
on God.
Mm-hmm. You think you're doing well.
And you always mm-hmm. wonder, do those people have true happiness? Are they content? Do they have to have somebody with them all the time? Somebody that's equal with them financially? Or are they ever really happy?
Well, I think we can say you see people like that and their happiness comes from material things. I've got more than you've got, and that's what makes me happy.
And we've talked about, we've seen, see people that have been at the top and then they don't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to go from the bottom to the top than it is from the top to the bottom.
But yeah. Like Saul building this monument for himself, do Christians sometimes do this in the same way? I know I haven't been coming to church like I should. I know I haven't been obeying like I should. But like I said earlier, I've just gotten this big bonus here, church. I'm giving you this big check. All of this is forgiven now. Do we use things like that to try to fool ourselves that now God is proud of me because of what I've done?
God knows the heart.
He knows the heart.
It's not the right way.
No. Because the writer, do we sometimes accept partial obedience to God?
You know. Kind of, sort of, you mean? I kind of, sort of, going to do right, but I'm
just as humans,
that's
we
right, as humans, that's right, I'm sort of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Because, like Zeta said, is there a comparison between idolatry and disobedience? Because if you let the devil get a hold of you and you start worshiping the wrong things, are you being obedient now? But disobedience just falls in line with you and packs up. How do you look at people? We talked about this earlier, but how can you look at people who would profess to be a great Christian and people respect them that way, but you know of things that they do that are against the will of God?
Oliver, can I say something about that?
Sure.
This past Friday, they had a prayer service downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And, I won't call any names, the preacher stood up and he said, and he gave this instance that he had a young black man that they had, their church had ministered to in prison, and he accepted Christ and he came to their church. They helped him get a job, and before he got saved, that he hated all white cops. All right. Then he had another man sit on the other end, and this guy was a retired policeman, and he stood up and he said, "Before I was saved, I hated all black men." He said, but after I came to Christ, I don't hate anybody, you know. I got so upset, I just wanted to claw the table because, and this preacher said, I take this black man and this white man on seminars with me to try to build race relations, you know, and I do these kind of things. And he said, excuse me, I would get upset telling him. But anyway, the man stood up, the white man that stood up, it was a little retired cop, Wes Strain. West Point, he owns most of the slum. He's the biggest slum lord in town. And I've heard him talk to the blacks in my neighborhood like they were dogs. And that has upset me. I've been upset on that all week. And that, to me, destroyed anything. To me, it destroyed because he is a very good friend of that preacher. Don't tell me that preacher doesn't know what kind of man West Point is.
That's, you know, that's, he may not. But
like he's living
two lives, yeah.
He's not walking his walk.
No, he's not. He came by my house and my dad stole a garbage can. We saw him. Sorry, but that just...
But bringing that out, I mean, this writer has a question. By doing partial obedience or a partial, say, religious practice, instead of being fully obedient, does that show our disrespect for God?
Yes.
I love you, Lord, and I believe your word, but I'm still going to go out here and do what I feel like I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Be godly. Yeah. Yeah.
One of two masters. You can't
serve both. And we talked about this before too. There are people that think, now I know that I can be forgiven every day, every instant if I ask for forgiveness for something. And so it's okay to kind of sort of do the Ten Commandments, because when I go to bed tonight, I'm going to ask forgiveness that I didn't follow them all the way through. And tomorrow we're going to have a clean slate and I'm going to start over. But then tomorrow night I'm going to do the same thing. And people think that way. I mean, you know, because we know that we've been given our salvation. We know that that was a gift. But we also know that he's standing there waiting for us to ask forgiveness. So
we see people on social media all the time.
Yeah.
Professing that they love God and all this stuff, but then you know how they're going out on Friday night.
Yeah.
Or Saturday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or they post something that is, you shouldn't, somebody shouldn't be reading anyway.
Yeah. That's.
How does that affect?
John says in Genesis somewhere, if you broke one of his commandments, you broke all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we sin. Yeah. The first time it would be a mistake. The second time it's a decision.
Our choice. We made the choice.
Because, I mean, the lesson doesn't cover these, but I thought it was interesting that Saul is talking to Samuel and begging him to forgive his sins and to let me go back so I can worship the Lord. And Samuel tells him, I will not go back with you. You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king of Israel. And he says, as Samuel turned to leave, Saul caught hold of the hem of his robe and tore. Now, accident? No. Samuel told him, he said, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to one of your neighbors, to one better than you. He who is the glory of Israel does not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that should change his mind. And Saul goes on that he sinned, please honor me before my elders and my people. Come back with me so that I may worship your Lord. It says Samuel went back with Saul, and Saul worshiped the Lord. But then Samuel asked him to bring him Agag, and it goes on. You get in trouble, you're guilty, and you know it. And then what do you start doing? You start calling on the Lord. You know? It's better, hopefully, to be obedient and not have to worry about sacrificing later than to just go along and think I'm not being seen or not being heard or not being caught. But once somebody catches me, it all changes. Mm-hmm.
It's always easy to blame somebody else anyway.
But sure.
And then at the end of the lesson, it was talking about scoffers may mock the notion of judgment to become because of its delayed arrival, but they will be proven tragically wrong. Because it might not be as quick as we want, but it will come.
Yep.
You see this one goes around, comes around.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in that.
All right, Miss Lee. Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.